In May of 2013, we asked energy activist Nancy LaPlaca why the sun-drenched state of Arizona burned so much coal. Nancy has moved to North Carolina, where she's helping uncover a national plot by big power companies to slow down solar power in America. Nancy, welcome back to Radio EcoShock.
Thanks, Alex. I'm so glad to be here.
Well, the cost of solar has fallen almost in half. It should be sweeping the United States, is it?
It's kind of a complex story, and I would say yes and no. Solar has been growing at an exponential rate. It's been growing quickly across the United States, but unevenly. You'd be surprised that there's not much growth in certain really sunny states like New Mexico or Arizona, and then there's been a lot of growth in places like Massachusetts and New Jersey. The biggest thing that's coming up is that the 30% federal investment tax credit is going to expire at the end of 2016. And so all the solar analysts see a huge drop-off at the end of 2016. So the problem there, Alex, is that we don't have market certainty. And so when you have a business situation without certainty, you've got people who bail and you've got companies that go bankrupt because they don't have enough sales to keep things going.
So according to the Washington Post on March 7, 2015, big U.S. utilities are fighting a campaign against rooftop solar power. What is the story there?
Yeah, that's an interesting story, and that was an excellent article. And in a nutshell, the utilities are a unique group, a unique business in our society. In many states, they have monopolies. In other words, no one else can compete. They also have extremely high costs, and they're called fixed costs. So in other words, the cost to run a coal plant, to run a nuclear power plant, is very high. And so when you start bleeding sales, even a little bit of sales, a small drop in revenue, a small drop in sales, can equal a very large drop in profit, because the utility first must cover its very high fixed costs to run the power plant, to pay the people, to buy the fuel, to pay for the emissions control, hopefully. To run the power plant is expensive, and so the utilities fear even a small drop in sales, because when customers go to solar, those sales are lost permanently.
Yeah, I know they have to take into consideration their stock values. They take out bonds. They take out debt and loans to have these fuel plants that are slated to run until 2040 and beyond. But if they do that, Nancy, by that time the world climate will be ruined with no way to stop runaway climate change. I'm wondering, is there a solution to this mess? Nancy, do you think some grid giants could go bankrupt if they can't or won't transition to clean power?
Oh, yes, we could very easily see it. I mean, look at the coal industry, which has lost literally 90% of its value in the last couple of years. The coal industry is going bankrupt, has gone bankrupt. However, we're still burning coal in power plants. So those utilities, even though the owners of the coal mines may change, the utilities are still burning coal. And you bring up a very valid point. If indeed, for example, we don't have as much natural gas as the shale industry would like you to believe, we could end up with literally many, many tens and even hundreds of billions of dollars in what's called stranded assets. So an analogy, Alex, is what happened after Chernobyl, when all of a sudden all those nuclear power plants that were being built came to a halt. Those assets were basically stranded. And so ratepayers paid for them quietly. Many folks didn't realize they were paying maybe, you know, 50 cents a month on their power bill for a nuclear power plant that never got built. But the possibility of stranded assets is very real. And if you look at folks like the carbon bubble folks, Carbon Tracker, who are talking about a carbon bubble, this is part of that. Those assets could be literally abandoned, either because we realize that due to climate change we can't burn that carbon, because we run out of fuel, because the fuel becomes too expensive.
Well, in a way, I'd love to show my grandson, you see that monster power plant over there, it used to burn coal or oil or gas, and now it doesn't anymore because we've learned, but we'll see if that day comes. Let's get specific. Now, in North Carolina, the big power is Duke Energy. Duke brags they've got a $3 billion wind and solar division. Are they sincere about wanting to get off fossil fuels?
You know, this is an interesting story. Certainly not in North Carolina. Duke Energy buys solar plants all over the country. They own quite a few in Arizona and California and in other states. But here in North Carolina, their home state, their plan for clean energy is 4% by 2029. That's in 15 years. So in other words, Duke Energy only plans to be 4% clean energy by 2029. And that is just simply inadequate. The other irony is that Duke Energy engages in deals that are illegal here. And many of us believe and have good reason to believe that Duke Energy is behind the legislative and other regulatory efforts to stifle clean energy. So in other words, Duke Energy takes advantage of certain financial arrangements that are legal in other states, but they're making them illegal here in North Carolina, and that's why we in North Carolina are looking at kind of a very difficult solar future at the end of this year.
So what is going on with the solar situation in North Carolina?
Well, we're also kind of unique in that virtually all of our solar is wholesale. In other words, it's very large scale. And, in fact, Duke Energy has taken half of the solar tax credits. Now, we still have right now, it's going to change at the end of the year in a few short months, a thriving solar industry where every dollar that was spent in solar tax credits, we had very generous state tax credits of 35%. In other words, if you invested a dollar in solar, you could write off 35% of that. That tax credit is going to end at the end of the year. Duke Energy took half of the $200 million total that was spent on those tax credits over the last 7 years. However, when you look at those tax credits, every dollar that came out of taxpayers' pockets returned $1.54 to the tax coffers. In other words, it was a net gain, so that every dollar citizens spent on tax breaks came back in property and other taxes $1.54. In addition, every dollar spent on taxes came back as 10 to 20 times that amount of economic activity. In other words, the citizens spend a dollar on a tax credit, but it ends up building $20 worth of solar. And that $20 worth of solar returns $1.54 to the tax coffers. So it was really very foolish for the state legislature to kill the extension of this state tax credit and also to kill this certain finance arrangement known as third-party solar, which would allow no-money-down solar. And one last thing about this third-party solar that's very interesting, Alex, is Duke Energy is right now in 6 states, and in 5 of the states that don't allow third-party sales, 4 of them are Duke Energy states. Florida's one, North Carolina, Kentucky, and Indiana. So I think we could say that Duke Energy is working actively to stop this very successful financing mechanism that is responsible for at least 80% of the solar that's been built in the country.
And I know that kind of financing and other plans are available in Europe, and it's flourishing there because of it. Well, look, it seems like the American states with the most sun, as you say, have some of the worst records for solar power. Take Florida. How are they doing?
Yeah, that's a great question, Alex. Florida is a very interesting state. They're 61% gas, natural gas. They're 23% coal, and they're 12% nuclear, and they have a negligible amount of solar. The reason they don't have much solar is because this financing arrangement called third-party solar, where basically you can build solar for no money down, that is illegal in Florida. There's a huge battle going on right now in Florida with an initiative, a ballot initiative that would allow this, and then the utilities, a utility-backed group, went and filed their own initiative. So it's sort of a battle of the initiative, because if you can create doubt and confusion, you can at least prevent the other side from winning. But Florida really is a sad case, because the Sunshine State has very little solar.
That is ironic. And after we talked a couple of years ago, how is solar power doing in Arizona?
Arizona is another interesting case, Alex. Arizona is now at about 5% solar and about 40% coal. And they continue to operate some of the dirtiest, oldest coal plants in the United States, which is really sad, because they could easily be replaced with solar. I hear from my solar developer friends in Arizona that you could install utility-scale solar for 6 cents a kilowatt hour. And really, that's way cheaper than you could do it on the East Coast here in North Carolina. And the reason that they don't really, Alex, is because they can generate coal-fired electricity from a dirty power plant for 3 cents. They don't pay that 17 to 27 cents in health and environmental damages. Those just get dumped on us. They don't really pay the cost of coal ash, mercury, acid rain, you know, asthma, lost work days, et cetera. All they do is generate that coal kilowatt hour for 3 cents, and they do have other expenses, sell it for 11 or 12 cents, and make a profit. They don't want to go solar because, frankly, that means someone else gets the business. And in Salt River Project territory, they added a $50 a month fee to anyone who puts solar up on their roof. And so basically solar installations in that utility's area, and they have about 1 million customers, went down 90%. So in the world of solar, I'd say Arizona is, frankly, I'm sorry to say, something of a laughingstock. It's the sunniest place in the country and the world that is literally killing solar.
That's amazing. So if I put solar panels up on my roof and I want to hook into the grid and sell it to the utility, they're going to charge me an extra $50 a month?
Yes. Yes. In Salt River Project territory, yes. That's exactly what they're going to do.
That's outrageous. So what is going on with solar regulations in the U.S. Northeast?
The Northeast is interesting because that's what's called a deregulated market, Alex. And so in a regulated market, a utility like Duke Energy would go to the Utilities Commission and say, hey, we want to build a power plant. We want to build a gas plant. We want to build a nuclear plant. So give us the okay, and then we'll come back later and we'll give the ratepayers the bill. Well, in these deregulated markets, it's very different. You bid power in to an open market where the cost of power fluctuates daily. The reason that solar is flourishing in the Northeast is because you have some very forward-thinking utilities commissions that have given extra value to solar, or they've allowed certain types of solar. For example, one of the real no-brainers that hasn't gone anywhere yet but will is this idea of community solar. So community solar means I have too many trees in my house, I can't put up solar, but maybe me and 20 other people could go pay for a solar array, you know, 2 miles away in a nice, big, sunny, open field. And we would own it, and that's called community solar. States like Minnesota, Massachusetts, they're allowing community solar, and so that is flourishing. New York has some excellent solar policies. So does New Jersey, Massachusetts, Vermont. And so for that reason, solar is actually doing far better up there than it is in many of the sunny southwestern states right now. It's odd. The other interesting thing that's happening up in the Northeast is what's called demand response, which is sort of energy efficiency on steroids, where you could ask large energy users like Costco or Walmart to cut their energy use and pay them. That has been flourishing in that market, which is allowing utilities to burn less coal and gas. But they're trying to kill it because energy efficiency is undercutting nuclear and gas. And so, again, if these utilities can't sell enough power, they start to go in the red. So they don't want more energy efficiency.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith with my guest energy activist Nancy LaPlaca. We're talking about kind of a plot by big power corporations against solar power. So Nancy, what are the institutions and deep lobby groups fighting solar power in America?
Well, of course, there's the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC, it's called. There are the Koch brothers. There is the Edison Electric Institute, which is a nonprofit trade group that represents the investor-owned utilities. There are various trade groups that represent the natural gas industry, the coal industry. Basically, it's the fossil fuel companies and the electric utilities. And they are working to stop clean energy. And the Koch brothers, of course, are part of that. There's a lot of good work being done out there by Common Cause, by the Energy and Policy Institute, by Media Matters for America, by lots of good nonprofits that are looking at the connections and seeing where these, what we call AstroTurf groups, are getting their money to fight solar.
Nancy, talk to us about the role of the public utilities commissions that you mentioned in the struggle for solar, and can citizens directly affect those commissions, or are they captured by these grid power corporations?
You know, that's a lot of the crux of the matter. Most states, the governor appoints the utilities commissioners. In most states, the utilities are very, very big campaign cash contributors. So if you look at North Carolina, our governor, Pat McCrory, worked for Duke Energy for over 25 years. The Senate Majority Leader, Mike Hager, who helped kill solar, he worked for Duke Energy for many years. So you see this unholy alliance. In Arizona, Arizona Public Service Company, it will not deny it, and there's good evidence that they spent $3.2 million electing friendly commissioner. So some states, most states, commissioners are appointed by the governor, who unfortunately generally is tied up with campaign cash to the utilities. And then in the few states where they're elected, there's 13 states where they're elected, the utilities jump in and spend a lot of money. And so unfortunately, you've got a situation where these agencies are kind of secret. People don't even know about them. If you look at North Carolina and you consider that this group of seven commissioners, they are making decisions worth billions and billions and billions of dollars, tens of billions, even hundreds of billions over years. And yet you can't even get on the phone and listen to a hearing. You have to go there in person. You can't get on your computer and listen to what's going on. You have to go there in person. And so all we can do, groups like us, is shine a light, because as we know, sunshine is the best disinfectant. And so with an era of Citizens United, it's difficult, but, you know, there are many of us out there working to show that solar isn't dying because it doesn't work. It's struggling because the utilities and their allies are spending lots of money to hold it down.
Nancy, we know that in Europe, Asia, and even Middle East oil-producing countries, they're investing heavily in solar power. I'm worried about what happens to America when climate change becomes so obvious that carbon taxes or outright bans on dirty fuels like coal finally arrive in the United States. What happens to a country that doubles down on the energy sources of the past?
That's a question I've thought about a lot, Alex, and my hope is that that money that we've, you know, thrown down the drain, if we end up with stranded assets, all these pipelines, natural gas pipelines, all these power plants that we're not going to be able to use, coal plants, what will happen, I hope, is there's enough money left in the world and enough smart people to figure out the financing mechanisms that we can invest directly in our own clean energy. I believe, and the groups I work with, NC Warren and Climate Voices, in the democratization of electricity. And so my hope is that there are smart people out there who will make it happen and who will, for example, a green energy bank. I understand we're the only modern country that doesn't have a green energy bank, where you have a way for clean energy developers to borrow money at low interest. For example, there's a thing called the Master Limited Partnership. The shale oil industry has benefited greatly, tar sands, shale gas, oil industry, gas industry, and yet solar and wind are cut out. And so we're missing these huge pools of money that are available to the dirty energy providers that are not available to the clean energy providers. And that is my hope, Alex, that there's enough of us who work on this that we keep these ideas going and that we all recognize that it's about the financing. And so once we pivot, we hopefully can put these processes and rules and financial arrangements in place that allow clean energy to grow quickly.
Tell us just briefly about the organizations you work with, North Carolina Warn and Climate Voices, and maybe give us a couple of places where we could go to find out more about the solar power story.
Well, thanks, Alex. Yeah, it's NC Warn, and that stands for North Carolina Warn, www.ncwarn.org, and also climatevoicesus.org. Not Climate Voices, but climatevoicesus.org. And basically, we are motivated by we want a cleaner, greener world. We want clean electricity. We're very concerned about climate change. We're opposing Duke Energy's huge natural gas push. We are working with coal ash impacted communities because you probably heard that North Carolina had a huge coal ash spill. We have 150 million tons of coal ash in this state. We have 32 coal ash ponds with no lining, no groundwater monitoring. We're working on helping those communities. And we're helping to provide what's called solarized programs where you bulk buy solar for communities that want to put up solar.
We've been talking with energy activist Nancy LaPlaca. You can find links to everything we've talked about in my weekly show blog, published Wednesdays at ecoshock.info. Thank you so much, Nancy.
Thank you, Alex. My pleasure.
I'm Alex Smith reporting.
Radio EcoShock.